Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. We are talking Michigan's national championship victory over Washington, 34-13 in Houston. Myself, Alejandro, Sam Webb, Josh Newkirk, we are all down here providing coverage, so be sure to check it all out over at themichiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. Kind of a, I guess it was a little bit of a close game, but then Michigan started to pull away, and even when it was close, it did feel like this was Michigan's game to win. You saw the run game run for over 300 yards and 8 yards per carry, something they hadn't done either of those things all season, and then the defense probably can't come up with enough adjectives to describe this defense. I mean, this is one of the best defenses of the 21st century. You know, I asked Trevor Keegan about it after the game. He said 2001 Miami, 2021 Georgia, and 2023 Michigan. Those were his top three, and kind of looked at the numbers. I'm sure 2011 Alabama probably sneaks in there, but really, really, really impressive defense all season. But then against the number one passing offense, against a team that had all these great passing stats and was supposed to, you know, expose a Big Ten defense, Michigan did the exposing with their defensive play. So really, across the board, felt like a very strong victory. We don't really need to get into the nitty-gritty work. This is a little bit more of a big picture podcast, talking about what went into becoming a national championship team and what's next for the Wolverines. And so, Steve, we will talk about the game, what impressed us the most, in just a moment. But thinking about the national championship, we've been doing this podcast for a long time. I think we did a lot of those episodes kind of, maybe we weren't jerks about it, but in the back of our minds, we're like, Michigan just might not win a national championship in our lifetime. Because in the previous, 75 years, they had won in 1997. And so I remember like 2017, 2019, those years, it felt like, even if it was only technically a few wins here and there away, it did feel like at times they were really far from it. But the last 3 years, Michigan has made a lot of changes to make that a realistic, not just dream, but a goal. They are 40-3 the last three seasons. They have three Big Ten titles and a national title, and they have three losses. They literally have more championships than they do losses in the last 3 years. So they did a lot of things differently. They got a lot bigger in the trenches on both sides of the ball. They had new coaches in the trenches on both sides of the ball. I think Michigan had some great run game play. They switched defensive coordinators. A lot of talk about the culture change, becoming a player-led culture. Ben Herbert has had an increased role in these players. And some assistant coaches have pointed out, this is a much more Jim Harbaugh, the recruiting classes of 2021 and 2022, and I would say 2018 and 2019 as well, have shifted toward being a lot more like Harbaugh guys. So there's a lot of different things going on here, and we could probably talk for 3 hours if we really wanted to break down, everything that Michigan did or did right since that 2020 season when they went 2-4. But in your mind, what is the one, and perhaps something that came up if you were when you were watching yesterday, what is maybe the one that jumps out the most to you as the most important difference maker in Michigan going from a good, not great team. And then obviously the bad 2-4 2020 season to a team that marched its way to a national title this season.
Tough question, obviously. I say this knowing what we talk. By the way, Trevor Keegan, college football historian here, dropping the 0-1 Miami.
Yeah,
defense.
It was right away too. Yeah.
That's impressive.
That one on his
I like that. That's pretty impressive. So, it's two things. It's gotta be Sherrone Moore's ascension, right? From tight end coach to offensive line coach to offensive coordinator / offensive line coach. You know, it really kind of felt like, and here's the thing, like Michigan had some really good offensive lines, like under Ed Warner too, right? It wasn't like Michigan wasn't starting to turn around. It feels like forever ago, but we talked about how long it took them as a program to get out of that hole of those major missed recruiting classes under Brady Hoke, because they were continually playing guys who weren't totally ready. You know, offensive line, a position where unless you're like elite, 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 not a spot where you're normally going to make a major impact the first one or two seasons, right? I mean, we're looking at a situation now going into next season where guys like Gio Elhadi, Greg Crippen will be here for their third or fourth seasons, and they're just now in a position to maybe take a starting spot, right? I think that's the way teams would love to have it. Michigan was unable to have that for a long time. So just sort of that transition continuing, but also shifting over from Ed Warner to Sherrone Moore really seemed to, I guess I go back to when Michigan started to have success under Moore on the offensive line. The belief that there was just much more of a cohesive unit between coach and player. And at a position like offensive line, you know, chemistry, cohesiveness is paramount. So I think a lot about that. But then I think the other pretty easy one, in my opinion, Michigan finally got some elite quarterback play for an entire season.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's, you know, we look back at teams that have won the national championship, whether it's the 100 that Alabama's won or Georgia's won a couple here, the two. You know, even though the way Michigan won last night, they won it by running the football, but high level defensive play and quarterbacks who don't make mistakes. Now, a lot of the times it's been quarterbacks have been the best player. You know, you talk about like Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, but it's almost always mistake free play from your quarterback and then an elite defense. And obviously, Michigan had both of those. So, while the defense, I think, carried Michigan in the play, not carried, but like was the main catalyst, maybe even throughout the entire season, I think for Michigan to get here, I think, it was more about sort of the ascension of the culture up front on the offensive line and finally getting elite quarterback play.
Yeah, hard to argue with those. That's the fun thing about this question. I think every answer is technically a right answer. It's just a matter of what you think shifted the most. And the quarterback one, yeah, as soon as Jim Harbaugh found a five-star quarterback that reminded him of him, you know, suddenly the program is literally 40-3 since J.J. McCarthy set foot on campus, and he's, what, 27? Yeah, 27-1 as a starter. So hard to argue with that. I think the thing that jumps out to me is how player-led this team is. You know, that I think that is one of those cliches that people like to use. But I think, you know, they've had coaches kind of shift in and out, right? I mean, Mike McDonald was here for a year. He left. And you're not keeping all 10 assistant coaches these days. Now, this past year, they did get to keep a lot. And I think the allure of winning a national title really helped with that. And I think the cohesiveness and camaraderie among the assistants plays a role in that as well. But really, I mean, coaches kind of come and go, but teams are going to be defined by how their players work and how their players work together, but also how they work during the off season. Cause it's an interesting dynamic, in my opinion, where these players are doing something, workouts, film, practice. They're doing something probably 350 days a year, if you really think about it. But I would argue most of those are not days where they are like working directly with their assistant coaches. You know, it's whether it's you're working with the strength and conditioning staff, whether you're doing stuff on your own, whether you're, yeah, like it's January and you're just coming in to get a lift in. And so it's kind of an interesting thing where it's like, it is this every single day you're doing something, but you don't necessarily have the coaches. So you have to have some internal drive, some self-motivation, and, you know, you have to have leaders that motivate the team. Because I think there's a big difference between I'm going to go and get a lift in January versus what Michigan has been doing, which is just a different level of intensity and tenacity. And I think the 2-4 season motivated that. I think the losses to Ohio State motivated that. I think, you know, the outside doubt played a big role in that. But I think also this is a team that Jim Harbaugh, you know, Mikey Sainristil still told me a few months ago, you know, he came in, he basically told the seniors after that 2020 season, this team is going to go as far as you take us. I could be the best coach in the world. I could be the worst coach in the world. This team's going to go where you players take it. And I think that's a challenge, but that's also an opportunity. I mean, that's an empowering move for Jim Harbaugh to do, because he can't watch ESPN for 10 minutes without Jim Harbaugh's name being mentioned. And yet he's telling these players, hey, you're in charge here. And I remember when Jesse Minter, and I think Mike McDonald might have done it too, but in their first meeting with the players, they said, what do you want this defense to be known for? And even if they have ideas on the schemes and ideas on the approaches and the personnel and the stuff that they want to do with the defense, I mean, there is something to be said for empowering your players to drive the bus. Because ultimately, if your players are the ones leading workouts, right, you know, inspiring their teammates, providing the motivation, providing the fire, right, those teams are going to go further. Because coaches, they only get to, you know, inspire and motivate whatever so many days a year. It's got to be the players. It's got to be players like Blake Corum. It's got to be players like Chris Jenkins. Think about all the workouts and the work we've heard about their physical development, mental development, just becoming the best versions of themselves. Or it's got to be players like Junior Colson playing, winning a Big Ten championship with clubs on both of his hands, right? There has to be a certain, it's got to be led by the players. Trevor Keegan, you know, Zach Zinter, Michael Barrett, Mike Sainristil still. I mean, two guys who switched positions while they were at Michigan, weren't necessarily expected to be star defensive players. I mean, they were ranked, I think they were both outside the top 500 in the 24/7 sports composite. They've spent a combined 11 years on campus, and here they are, star players, captains for a national championship defense, one that we're talking about as one of the best of the 21st century. So yeah, I think becoming player led really, I mean, I think a lot of the other ones get a lot of airtime. They've had their moment in the sun, because the bigger D tackles that made a huge difference on Monday. You know, the offensive line made a huge difference. The run game, yes, quarterback, as you mentioned. I think having a defense that's multiple. I mean, I don't have the exact quote, but you know, the players were talking about, and so was Marvin Harrison Jr. in the Ohio State game, you know, how Michigan was confusing them with their coverage. And that's not something you see a ton of at the college level. So, you know, it all factors in, but I think at the end of the day, your team's going to go as far as your seniors, your leaders, your hardest workers go. Because Aiden Hutchinson, when he was on Michigan's team, he was their hardest worker. Blake Corum, he was a unanimous All-American who could have gone pro. He came back and not only was the team's hardest worker, I mean, he won the player-voted blue-collar award. Like, if your best player is also your most blue-collar player, that's going to be a good team culture. That's going to be a hardworking football team. So I think that's a big one. I do think, you know, if you're quantifying it, I think that the Ben Herbert effect is definitely real. You know, I will have a story about it in the next couple of days, but he does the strength and conditioning. And I'm emphasizing that that's two separate things, because I think he obviously knows how to lead workouts, get you stronger, get you faster. But I think he does a lot of mental conditioning, you know, with the different, I think the classic example is every day in the summer, they all draw cards, and whoever has, he just picks a random number, and those players have to go jump in the ice tub in their clothes and then go work out. And sometimes they have him go jump in the ice tub and he says, just kidding, you're not going to today. Like he does things to kind of like challenge you mentally, keep you on your toes, keep you from getting into getting lulled into a routine. He's very much about the like in football, something different can happen every single game. And so that's how he kind of treats the workouts. And it's, you know, he wants you to be, if it's randomly 22 degrees and snowing, you don't care. If it's 94 degrees and windy, like it was in Nebraska, you don't care. So I think he Ben Herbert built Michigan to be the toughest team in America. And I think that really showed against Alabama. I think that really showed against Ohio State. And I think en route to becoming the toughest team in America, I think Michigan became the best team in America. So very impressive across the board. But I mean, it's probably the stuff that books could be written about, you know, how Michigan evolved from 2020 and also 2019 and all that into a program that, I mean, it's them and Georgia the past 3 years in terms of who's been the best. So, and Georgia's got a lot more five-star recruits. Georgia's got, a little bit more of a talent base to work with, as do other programs. So for Michigan, you know, I when I look at their national title, I see a title that was won through largely just hard work and grit. I mean, there's certain pieces that fell into place or whatever, but yeah, very impressive. On that note, Steve, talking about this game specifically against Washington, what impressed you the most, whether it was an individual play or a player stepping up or a trend you saw or a position group that really jumped out to you? What was something that looking back on this game, because I think immediately, I don't know about you, but immediately I feel like everyone started talking about the season in general. But looking back on this game, what was something that jumped out to you as maybe, you know, a lot of things went the way we expected, but at the same time, they won the national title game by 21 points. So there had to be a few things that really jumped out as impressive.
I think it was impressive how right we were about this game. As far as it really did, it felt like Michigan really had Penix thinking and scrambling mentally, right? Go back to the Marvin Harrison stuff about the coverages. You know, we talked about that in the preview. I'd say so. I mean, yeah, so I'm impressed at how right we were, but I actually almost think we weren't. Maybe we also weren't as right as we maybe could have. Like, they did a better job of it than I thought they even would, right? He was just off balance all night. Michigan's interior defensive line. And again, I go back to our season previews and all that stuff. I said this was the year where, you know, it's been Michigan. Their ability to disrupt was from the outside in. And this year was going to be the opposite, where it was going to be the inside, making life a little bit easier for the guys on the outside. And yesterday was another prime example of that, right? Mason Graham should be a first-team preseason All-American next year. No ifs, ands, or buts. Force the pressure that caused Will Johnson's interception to start the second half. But just a force throughout, right? So, otherwise, yeah, I mean, this game actually did kind of play out a lot the way that I thought it would. I did not think Michigan would win by 21 points. But, Zach, if we tell everyone, did we not? Before we re-recorded, I think we both talked about, you know, you don't really have the balls to predict a blowout in the national championship game, but right. we both did say before we pressed record that there were the makings of a potentially dominant win for Michigan in this one, just because it felt like Michigan was a really bad matchup for Washington, and that's how it played out. So again, yeah, can't say enough about JJ McCarthy. No mistakes, made the right throws when he needed to. Donovan Edwards finally, you know, does what Donovan Edwards does, which is make big plays in the biggest moments. So two easy touchdowns for him, and he really came to play. That might be a nice, should be a nice confidence boost for him heading into the offseason. Again, I just don't see him leaving. I just still don't think there's enough there, and so I think that to end this season on such a high note after what was admittedly long season for him is the best possible scenario heading into 2024. So yeah, otherwise this kind of was the way Michigan has won all year, is it not? Did run the football more effectively than they have, but it was still just that the same blueprint where suffocating defense caused a couple turnovers, and Michigan just wore the opponent down in the second half on both sides of the football. That's how Michigan's been doing it for the last couple of years. And yeah, yesterday was sort of the cherry on top of that, because it's exactly how they won. And I felt like that's what we thought was going to happen. And Michigan maybe did an even better job of it than we thought they would.
I can agree with that. I mean, we were nothing new for us, right? But yeah, I think the game did play out pretty similar. I mean, we talked about in the pregame podcast, the Washington's run defense, pretty suspect. You know, we circled that as kind of a potential, like, hey, the Michigan run game of old, of last year, is probably going off on this defense. And then we saw the Michigan run game of last year. You know, Donovan Edwards, he's probably what impressed me the most, because I don't think I predicted Michigan to win. I think we both predicted Michigan to win by double digits, put up 30 plus points, and have success in the run game. But I don't know that I would have predicted Donovan Edwards to run for 100 yards and to have two touchdowns and to have his two longest carries of the year. But credit to him, I think it was neat talking to him about this season, because I think a lot of players would have like downplayed their struggles or been like, hey, what are you talking about? I just ran for 100 yards in the championship game. But he was pretty open. He was pretty open before the game too. You know, he's been seeing a therapist. He's been, you know, leaning into his faith, kind of getting a little more introspective. And I think it's really matured him, to be honest. I don't know that I've spent enough time with him to unpack it much more than that. But you know, hearing some of his comments after the game and his view of everything, I think it's hard not to be happy for him to have this kind of breakthrough game, because I think it validates a lot of the work he's put in that doesn't always get seen. Like against Alabama, he had 4 carries for 11 yards. That's not reflective of the work that he's put in. That's not reflective of the player that he is. And so, yeah, for him to rattle off a couple of big runs, I mean, that just helped Michigan. I mean, that flipped the whole game in Michigan's favor. I mean, without those runs, I still kind of feel like Michigan wins, but I think they have to sweat a little bit more. I think they have to, you know, they might be going into halftime trailing, or who knows. But yeah, I mean, that really made it Michigan's game to win, as opposed to like a toss up between two undefeated teams. And so that really impressed me. And I just hearing kind of his viewpoint of it. And I think the message that he had both before and after the game was, this was a game where he was going to let go of the pressure. I mean, he was really going to just try to get back to basics, not think about what he should be doing, what you know, his box score stats should look like. Yeah, you know, he's just gonna go out there and try to do one play at a time, try to do his job, and just hope for the best. And it worked. So hats off to him. I think Michael Barrett mentioned to me, he's like, a lot of players in his situation might have kind of packed it in for the season or pouted or maybe even hit the transfer portal. Donovan Edwards didn't, and I'm sure he's glad that he didn't pack it in, and I'm sure Michigan is too, because he went off in the Michigan's biggest game of the 21st century. So that really impressed me. Totally agree with you on the pressuring Penix, making him uncomfortable. In 17 dropbacks where he was pressured, according to Pro Football Focus, Penix was 3 for 15 passing for 14 yards. He had one touchdown in those three completions, but you know, that fourth down, I guess it was Washington's only touchdown, that fourth down pass. But he had 2 picks, 3 for 15 passing. He also took a 12-yard sack, and he had a 5-yard scramble. So basically he had a net gain of, 7 yards in 17 dropbacks where he was under pressure. So, you know, we mentioned that that's probably going to make a big difference in the game. I even pulled out the different passing stats when he's under pressure. Kind of dropped the C.J. Stroud comparison. And I feel like that played out pretty similarly. When he had a clean pocket, Penix was money. He threw for over 250 yards. It did feel like they connected on a few of the downfield plays. Not as many of the deep passes as they would like, though. I mean, they had 77 in their first 14 games. They had one last night. So that was another key. But I do think the pressure helps with that. You know, that prevents the long downfield passing plays from being there. So, yeah, I think Michigan's defensive front brought pressure all night. Hard not to, like, if you're giving out helmet stickers or game balls, it's hard not to give it to the Michigan defensive front, especially the tackles. I feel like Kenneth Grant, Mason Graham, Chris Jenkins, they were really providing a lot of pressure. How many times on this podcast have we talked about as soon as Michigan can get consistent pressure from its interior tackles, they're going to be a national title caliber team, or at least a national title caliber defense. And that's what they've been all season. And that's what they were on Monday. All right, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll zoom out a little bit more. We'll talk about the legacy of this senior class, and then we'll also talk about the most important stay or go decision that isn't Jim Harbaugh or J.J. McCarthy. This is the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So, Steve, I kind of gave my thoughts on the senior class a moment ago when I talked about the player-led team, thinking about Michael Barrett, Mikey Sainristil, you know, Blake Corum, Trevor Keegan, Zach Zinter, a lot of blue-collar, gritty seniors who have been around long enough to remember when things weren't so easy for Michigan, where Ohio State didn't seem like a game that they could win, where the college football playoff was kind of like this foreign concept, and the national championship altogether was definitely a foreign concept. But I want to get your thoughts, I mean, on this senior class. Some of them will come back, right? The COVID of it all kind of makes things interesting. I've seen the 44 seniors mentioned a lot. I do want to say that's a good IQ test. If someone's dropping the 44 seniors, Michigan is not going to lose 44 seniors. They aren't. One, I think that includes redshirt juniors and maybe even some redshirt sophomores, because Michigan does not list the redshirt stuff on their official roster. And then two, I mean, a lot of those players might come back for a fifth year anyways. Happened last year. It happened the year before. It happened the year before. I mean, it's just a part of college football. So they're not losing 44 seniors, but they are going to lose a lot of seniors. And there's a lot of guys who won't be back next year, whether it's the offensive linemen, there's a number of defensive standouts. Your thoughts on the legacy of Michigan's senior class that captured a national title on Monday?
Man, a lot of great individual stories, right? A lot of journeys, You know, I said you mentioned Barrett and Sanger still are two that immediately come to mind in that regard. As far as, I mean, we got to look. I mean, we'll see where he goes in the NFL draft, but Mike Sandersill's position change has got to be up there with Richard Sherman as far as Harbaugh's best, you know, because he's got a decent track record at this point of like moving guys around. The level that Mike Sandersill has played at for Michigan the last, we'll say, season and a half, you know, has just been, it's been one of the biggest catalysts to their success defensively. It's why they seem to be looking a lot harder for guys that are just like him, not just in the on the recruiting trail, but even in the transfer portal. They're looking for that. They want an elite nickel, seems to be like much higher on the list than maybe it was in the past. So, and Michael Barrett, yeah, high school quarterback. Never really knew exactly, thought he was probably going to play at linebacker, but there was talk he could be a running back. I mean, and then just another guy who ascended in the last two seasons, I think, in particular. But yeah, I think the legacy a lot for these guys is staying the course. And you talk about going back to the player-led workouts, the player-led stuff. I really kind of think, you know, he's not part of the senior class, but I think a guy like Aiden Hutchinson, like, is the one that really maybe set the tone for these types of stories for these guys, as far as, you know, that I always go back to when Harbaugh talked about Hutchinson ringing himself out every day. Feels like there's about 20 guys in the team that do that now, or at least it feels like they do. So, you know, I think it's a torch, a mixture of like a torch passing, but also just guys having faith in the coaching staff and their plan for them, and vice versa. Again, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, I still think offensively, I think that you talked about the grittiness, the toughness. I think that's where that really stands out. You talk about the Keegans, the Zinters, Barnhart, Corum, obviously. Even a guy like Cornelius Johnson, who is probably never going to get enough credit for some of the big plays that he's made, particularly in the big games. Never was a Michigan's like statistical, like was never like a statistical elite statistically, but just always had a knack, seemed to have a knack for making a key play at big points in a loss in most of Michigan's biggest games. So yeah, I don't know. It's very hard to narrow it down to like a couple sentences about what this group's legacy will be, but I think the biggest thing is a true cohesiveness. You know, Michigan isn't going to win a national title the same way schools like Georgia and Alabama do, where it's just reloading with 10, 12 top 100, not just four-star guys. Like, we're talking like 10, 12, like top 100 level players every single season, you know, where I don't necessarily think they're individual players. Obviously, when those teams win, that have great stories and great, have had big journeys, but by and large, it's very talent driven when you're seeing the same programs win all, you know, and Michigan's got a ton of talent on this team. There's going to be a bunch of guys that are going to get drafted, but it's not the same type of talent. A lot of the talent was developed. A lot of the talent took time to shine. So for this group in particular, I think it is, it's a lot about that journey and sort of that, yeah, that gradual build of cohesiveness, because it did start to get to the point. And I say this knowing that Michigan only trailed for like, what, 40 minutes all season or something? Like some outrageous stat. They only trailed like for...
Yeah, I think it was only 13 minutes in the second half.
Right? Like just like stats that don't even make sense. You know, so I say this knowing that, but also just it... I don't know if there was a point in any game this season, even against Alabama in the second half when they did trail, because it was such a foreign thing, but you just kind of felt like they were going to pull it out. And, you know, that's not normal in football, right? Teams lose all the time. But with this group, it just, this season in particular, just kind of felt like a culmination of all that, that building of chemistry, cohesiveness that really can help lead you to a championship team. I guess maybe all I'm thinking, like a lot of selflessness too. right? Yeah. Not a senior, but I look at McCarthy. You know, a guy who, if Michigan wanted to drop back and throw the ball 40 times, he'd probably be being talked about as a top 10 draft pick. Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, like both, neither of them caring or having any issues with, you know, not being the guy. Particularly Edwards, who, again, not a senior, but at the same time, you're Blake Corum. Corum, think of the stats he could have put up if he was getting 20% more carries. So, or the receivers, excellent blocking, excellent blockers on the outside, guys that have put the work in there. Also, sort of with the style of Michigan's offense, you know, possibly sacrificing individual statistic for team benefit. You know, and so I do think that, yeah, the selflessness also for the players, I think, is another thing that, now that I talk it out, kind of really stands out.
It does. I do. I mean, we talked about the position changes. We talked about players having to wait their turn. We talked about players having maybe lesser roles than they might have at a different team. And they didn't, not a lot of departures. I mean, obviously players are going to transfer, and that totally makes sense for a lot of players. But this was a team that, you know, especially the seniors who were around for that 2-4 season. I mean, Steve, it wasn't necessarily as bad as some people portray it, but that whole thing was in danger of unraveling. I mean, everything Michigan had built, and we're not just talking about the head coach situation. I mean, the culture could have stayed bad. It could have gotten worse. You know, it could have been a lot of finger pointing, and Aiden Hutchinson and Josh Ross and some of the players in that class deserve a lot of credit. But I think, you know, talking to different players on this team, it's very clear the presence that guys like Stainer still, Barrett, Corum, Jenkins, Keegan, and Zinter. I mean, it's very apparent the role they play in keeping this team motivated, keeping this team hungry. I think that's a big part of it, is they didn't bail and go look for something easier or a more ready-made championship contender. They stayed and did the work. Again, I think it's such a huge influence on your team when your best players and your most experienced players are also your grittiest and hardest working players. Because it's great when you can have, you know, a third string linebacker be this gritty, hardworking practice, you know, warrior. But if you can have that same mentality and have it beat someone with Blake Corum's talent, that's even better. That's even better. So, yeah, I could probably talk about, you know, this senior class for a long time. Really impressive individuals when you talk to them too. Very smart, very mature. I mean, I don't know the exact majors and GPAs, but like Blake Corum's a smart dude. Zach Zinter is very smart. Mikey Samer still extremely smart. I was talking to one of our national writers and about it, because he was interviewing players all week, and he's like, "Yeah, this team is really smart. Like all their seniors and captains are just like, they get it. They're like, it's like talking to NFL players." And that's great in interviews. It's even better in film room, right? It's even better when you're putting together a game plan. Yeah, that's how you do it, I guess. You know, have depth, have experience, have a lot of guys come back, have a lot of guys stick around when things get tough. Don't cower away, right? Dig their heels in and figure it out together. And not something every program has the luxury of being able to do, but Michigan did it. Impressive to them. All right, let's turn the page briefly. Now, we don't want to talk forever and ever about these decisions, because I think by Monday they all have to be made. I think either Sunday or Monday is the NFL draft declaration deadline, and then the other day is the transfer portal, because Michigan and Washington have a few extra days to enter the transfer portal. I'm guessing a lot of players who might think about transferring might just wait until the spring at this point, because the semester starts literally tomorrow in Ann Arbor. So kind of a weird bind if you're on the fence about transferring. But a lot of NFL draft decisions. I think when I did a story on it in December, and I'll probably re-up it and update things, but I think I had 19 players with draft decisions to make, either meaning that they technically had eligibility but hadn't announced what they were doing. So anyway, a lot of decisions. The two that have gotten a lot of focus, Jim Harbaugh and potential NFL offers, and then JJ McCarthy, of course. we can talk about those probably once they're decided upon. I don't want to record a podcast and then by the time I upload it, a decision's been made. But for the other players, thinking about the other players with remaining eligibility, but they're also draft eligible, what's one that you're circling, Steve, that you think is most important for Michigan for next year?
Oh boy, player-wise, tough one. I almost got to think it's got to be like a coaching thing. I don't think he's going to be back, but I would just say like having Jesse Minter back for another year would be a huge win for Michigan. I guess I think about somebody like Rod Moore. I think Braden McGregor is a guy who could leave and find early success in the NFL, but is a guy I think is someone who could have a huge year. Like they have a few guys I think on their roster that are like right on that borderline of they're all good enough to go and they could go and they could get drafted in decent spots, but guys who are primed to maybe take an even bigger leap next year. And McGregor is one of those. So he'd probably kind of be the other one. I'd be interested to know. I mean, didn't Carson Barnhart pretty much already come out and say he was leaving?
Yeah. And on that note, I will say a lot of these decisions, having now talked to between me and Alejandro, I think we've talked to almost everyone who was on my list about their decisions. A lot of it is, you know, it's not quite the same as it normally is because a lot of these extra eligibility seasons are COVID. It's the extra COVID year. So it's not necessarily a season they planned on. And, you know, Carson Barnhart and Trente Jones, Barnhart basically said he's gone, but Trente Jones, I think he's a little bit more on the fence, but you know, one of the factors is he's 22, 23 years old.
Right.
He already has a master's degree. Like there is some sense of like, hey, the college experience. I mean, you know, because Barnhart, it would have been a sixth season and a fourth or fifth season as a starter. So yeah, it's kind of a different, some of these players have like little somewhat different dynamics where it's like in their mind, they're not actually leaving early. They just aren't capitalizing on an extra year that they have.
Yeah. But here's the other wild card though, Zach, is the NIL stuff, right? I mean, this crowdfunding that Michigan has done has absolutely dwarfed last year. And with them winning the national title, I feel like there's going to be no shortage of people that are going to continue to donate to a fund like that Champion Circles fund, which I believe last I checked, it's somewhere near $700,000 has been raised. And like I said, not really slowing down. So that's another, yeah, you talk about the COVID year sort of being a bit different variable in here, but so is that crowdfunding, the NIL stuff, you know, and we saw how that ended up getting guys like Trevor Keegan, Zach Zinter, and Blake Corum to return. You know, that maybe is a situation where you're a guy like a Rod Moore or a Braden McGregor, where it's like these guys are not going to be in a dire, like they could be in a beneficial financial situation regardless if they decide to go to the draft or if they decide to come back, you know. So if it's like a get drafted in the second or third round versus coming back, getting paid or making good money to play for Michigan for another year and possibly propelling yourself into like first round consideration, which is kind of how I feel like it would be with a guy like Braden McGregor. You know, I really think if he came back and had I'm not big on the raw statistics, and I don't think raw statistics matter as much when it comes to the NFL anymore. I think it's all about what you see on the film, but he's one of those guys who I think, again, could leave tomorrow, could get drafted in a pretty decent spot and have a great NFL career, but as a guy I think could really be primed to ascend even further next year. You know, I think it makes that decision a little bit tougher than it normally would. So that's why I'm almost a little interesting to hear certain guys say that they're already out the door because, yeah, this is not the same college football it was even, what, at this point, even 3-4 years ago. Like, there's actual financial considerations to make no matter what direction you decide to go. So I would almost think there's a bigger emphasis on honest conversations with the coaches about where, you know, like I take a guy like Harbaugh who's had so much, I got to assume there's conversations there about, you know, this is where we feel like how many times we've seen Jim Harbaugh openly say that of certain guys are ready to go, whatever. It's not a deal where they want him to come back just to keep a good player around. I just wonder how some of these conversations could go as far as, we have no doubt you'll get drafted. We think you could improve your stock. And oh, by the way, here's this NIL fund, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. You know, I got to think with the amount of money they've raised that a couple guys who maybe in a normal year would have left may end up coming back next year. So who will that be? No idea.
Yeah. And part of it is with other players at your position leaving, you might have more of a chance to showcase what you can do. I will say, you credit to Michigan, they finished business this year. No one is coming back saying they have unfinished business. You know, that's just, and, you know, leading up to the Rose Bowl, when we were talking to a lot of these players, almost all of them said, it depends on how things go against Alabama or in the college football playoff, because those are opportunities to show what you can do against scouts of every team in the NFL. It's an opportunity to show what you can do against top tier talent, you know, top four teams. And Michigan looked really, really good, especially defensively in these two games. So yeah, a lot of these players are going to have more NFL interest than they did a month ago. So I think it'll be interesting, but you're right. Like Braden McGregor, for example, well, if Jalen Harrell leaves, you know, can he play on the other side? I know he doesn't normally play on that side, but you know, you start to think about some of those things. Or, you know, to me, the two most important ones for Michigan to, you know, if I've got $700,000 to spend, you know, this is where I might try to go, is Trente Jones and Donovan Edwards. I mean, Trente Jones, he looked like a draft caliber tackle down the stretch. You know, when he kind of, the Big Ten championship game, the Alabama game, the Washington game, he looks ready, but he also could do it for a whole season. Maybe be first team all Big Ten, maybe climb up that draft board. Or Donovan Edwards. Well, Blake Corum's gone, so he could theoretically come back and be kind of the go-to every down running back. So I think that can play a factor, because I don't think too many players are going to look at this and say, oh, I'm disappointed with how the season ended. You know, I got more I got to do. You know, if people come back, it will be not in a anti-Michigan way, but it'll be a business decision. It'll be, I want to improve my draft stock. The NIL opportunity was there and it's enticing, and that's why I'm back. And I want to be a leader of this team. I do think the opportunity to be a captain of a top five team and all that can come with, both in NIL, but also in legacy and things, that might drive a few people too. You know, Rod Moore could be one of them. So yeah, there'll be a lot of decisions. Definitely check out the coverage over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Steve, Michigan doesn't win a national championship that often. We don't normally do one of these podcasts. Anything else you want to add or anything else you want to say about this year's team and this year's run?
I mean, we kind of talked about it in the preview of the game. Obviously, it's a lot of fun. There's never a dull moment, good or bad, when covering well, probably any major college program, I guess, but this season was not normal for Michigan. And I just got to think it's got to be, if it could feel any better than it normally would, I just think it, for this team and this group, it has to, knowing all of the just BS that was thrown their way throughout the season. I'm thinking of the players in particular. Coaches can handle that kind of crap. I mean, Harbaugh's the kind of guy made to kind of handle those type of distractions, you know, and I wonder, and I assume to an extent that the way Michigan responded at Penn State, I think that was the time where I think they're going to do it. Because I think we'd still argue. I think Penn State was the best defense Michigan played this year. I think Happy Valley, I think you even said toughest place to play. Right.
Yep,
in the Big Ten, at least, you know, at least as far as a team that Michigan plays year in and year out. To go in there and win the way they did, I think that was, for me, that was the moment where I'm like, yeah, they really might be able to do it. Thought they were going to get to the playoffs either way, but you know, the playoffs have been a different animal for them. Quite a cool, pretty cool. It's like hard to believe, you know, you win a national championship and you win six games without your head coach, three of which you're talking at Penn State, you're talking Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State. I mean, you beat Ohio State with an interim head coach is just an Ohio State team that was ranked higher too. You know, another really good Ohio State team that probably would have given Alabama.
Until Michigan played them, this was Ohio State's year.
Right, exactly. So, you know, to do that, pretty cool. Like I said, with the stupidest scandal in sports history, or among the stupidest, probably the stupidest college football scandal since the Ohio State tattoo stuff, if I'm being honest. That's one thing I feel like the rivals have in common, are that two of the stupidest NCAA investigation related scandals, or whatever you want to call them, were pertained to these two programs. Totally stupid. You know, I think more for the players to respond the way they did on the field and to handle it the way they did off the field too. But that part, I'm not necessarily, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, we've kind of talked about it this episode. We've talked about it before. Just they almost carry themselves like a pro team in a lot of ways, I feel like, right? I think the way they interact with the media, you know, I even go as far as like the extreme amount of like philanthropy, you know, that many of the players do, and like become like being members of the community. It just kind of feels like Michigan is sort of run the way a pro football team is run operationally. But the players are still the ones that make it work and make it go. And I'm trying to think of some of the, you know, better moments of the season. I kind of think about Michigan running the same play like six times in a row with Alex Orji to score that last touchdown against Michigan State, and to see the reaction when he scored. If you go back and watch the highlights of that game, you'll see, I think, Sherrone Moore, I think some other players screaming over at Michigan State sideline, because I think, you know, this was when all that the sign crap was fresh. I got to suspect they believe Michigan State had something to do with, at least with the accusations, or maybe I think it was their AD was the one quoted as like about player safety. Again, maybe the stupidest moment in the stupidest scandal ever, about being concerned about this player, the safety of his players, because Michigan was going to know where their players were going to be because of this advanced scouting. So to beat Michigan State 49-0, I don't care how crappy they were, was a pretty cool moment. And then, like I said, you can look at Ohio State, you look at Alabama, but to me, it was the turning point was that win at Penn State. Penn State, bad offense, but man, their defense, so good, and so tough at home. And for Michigan to just run the ball the entire second half, control the game, was just impressive. And to me, it was the moment when I thought, not that I thought they'd even get there. I thought they were going to, I had a feeling they would win it after that point. But yeah, a lot of fun. Hey, by the way, you guys killed it too. Good work in Pasadena and in Houston. Our readers are lucky to have you guys. You guys really did a great job. You and Alejandro always do. So good work to you guys. I know the work's not done. It's going to be a busy couple weeks for us, but hopefully you guys will be able to enjoy the fruits of your labor in a few weeks and take a little break, because I know it's deserved. So yeah, a lot of fun.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve. And I know Alejandro does as well. Plenty more to come. Yeah. With all these decisions, I'm sure at some point we'll talk about the, what's going on with this basketball team. It won't be today, but that will come up at some point. One quick thing I do want to say about, you know, my parting thoughts on the national championship, just something I was thinking about today. And I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but what a recruiting class Michigan's 2021 and now 2022 classes are turning out to be. 2021, it was ranked pretty high. I mean, I think it ended up 13th, but you know, had JJ McCarthy, had Donovan Edwards, had Junior Colson. You know, there were some some headliners, but what really impressed me about that class is how it really stuck together. I mean, it was a 23 member class. Michigan goes 2-4. They only lose one commitment. I think they lost Xavier Worthy in the spring. I don't think that was related to Michigan's 2-4 record. The fact is, this team saw Michigan struggling, or this class, I should say, saw Michigan struggling and said, bring it on, game on. You know, and JJ McCarthy had a lot to do with all of that. But thinking about all the different factors of Michigan struggling, you know, hot seat talk, and then you also have the COVID factors where, you know, these guys aren't necessarily hanging out or getting to know each other in the same way that the previous class were able to do. So yeah, the unity and then the trust. I think they've only lost three transfers from that class since then. And you can go look at it over at 24/7 Sports. Not a lot of those guys are starting. So there's a lot of faith that, you know, maybe next year can be the year for like a guy like Rayshon Benny, right? Or you could keep going down the list. I didn't mean to pick on him, but you know, a lot of players, Greg Crippen, another guy who, you know, next year is kind of the year where he's going to get a chance to show what he can do. Giovanni Elhadi. And then I think in addition to the 2021 class, the 2022 class, just darn impressive, especially on defense. Whoever was in charge of scouting and kind of figuring out who the top target should be, boy, they really did a nice job in that 2022 class. And I've mentioned it before, 2021 and 2022, not typical recruiting years in terms of high school seasons were canceled. You had camps that were canceled. You kind of had to do your own work and work a little bit harder at identifying and evaluating talent. But yeah, that 2022 class, add Keon Sab to the list of players who really, really look impressive. He probably was one of the top five most impressive things I saw against Washington. I thought he had a fantastic game. But you also have Will Johnson. You also have Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, Colston Loveland. I mean, these were
Derek Moore.
Outside of Will Johnson, these were, yes, Derek Moore. Now, Derek Moore and Will Johnson were rated pretty high as recruits, but a lot of those guys, and Sab was as well, but like Loveland, Kenneth Grant, Mason Graham, they eventually got bumped up, but they were not top 100, not even particularly close to top 100 recruits. But Steve, I think from the literal first game they played at Michigan, it was like, oh yeah, Michigan has a hit. And I think that to me, you know, I you would know better than me, but I remember some of those recruitments. There was a little bit of, they had to hold off schools who were kind of trying to get involved late. And so that's an advantage to Michigan where they were in on these recruits, and they often are. Sometimes they do lose recruits that they're like the first offer on. It feels like running back, feels like you're always telling me, oh yeah, Michigan offered them, and then every other school offered right after. But you know, it did feel like 2021 and 2022, because 2021, Rod Moore was a, you know, three-star. Yeah, he probably gets ranked a little bit higher if he's able to do more camps, or I can't remember if his senior season got canceled, but every player, it seemed like, had less opportunities to show what they could do. But Michigan just really, really, really standing out in those two classes. And it really showed. I think the 2021 playoff push, that was all about the 2018 class. You know, last year it was kind of a little mix of a bunch of different recruiting classes. But this year, you know, for as much as we talk about that senior class legacy, does feel like there's a lot of underclassmen who will be back next year who are not draft eligible, especially on defense. But I would say a couple on offense as well, where Michigan just, they might be a four-star or even three-star recruit, but you watch them play and that's a five-star caliber player. Like Kenneth Grant, I don't remember what he was rated. It was too low. You know, Mason Graham, same deal. Colston Loveland, same deal. So yeah, credit to Michigan. I mean, that's kind of the dream scenario for the Wolverines, right? Because it's for them to recruit at a top five level. I don't even know exactly how they would go about doing that right now in the modern era of college football. But if you can recruit kind of in the 8 to 12 or 8 to 15 range, find some hidden gems or players who are one off season away or one, you know, Ben Herbert summer away, you know, that's how you can have some staying power at the top. A lot of it's going to depend on who stays and who goes, but you know, Michigan's going to have a chance to be in the playoff next year and win the whole thing. And they're going to have a lot of players who have played on the national stage and won't wilt in the moment. And so, yeah, just something that jumped out to me kind of when I'm putting together the different stories and thinking, man, that 2022 class, they found another guy who's extremely good, another guy who can help them. So something to think about, something to think about as we start to turn the page toward the 2024 season. We'll have tons and tons and tons of content, both written, podcast, video, the whole thing, over at 24/7 Sports, the Michigan Insider. So be sure to check that out. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.